The advent of automobiles brought increased mobility to Americans, but cars also created suburban sprawl and isolation. This hour, finding our way back to new urbanism. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. With suburban sprawl, front porch gave way to backyard decks. And even if a grocery store was within walking distance, there were often no sidewalks to take you there. This hour, we look at new urbanism. It's a movement that cultivates qualities found in older communities, like walkability and connectivity. This hour, we also want to hear from you. For instance, if you could change one physical aspect of your neighborhood, what would it be? Join our conversation as we discuss new urbanism after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The advent of automobiles brought increased mobility to Americans, but cars also created something we have come to know as suburban sprawl. It can also mean some isolation. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The suburban sprawl with that, well, we said goodbye to the front porch, I guess, and said hello to those backyard decks. And even if a grocery store is within walking distance, perhaps this is true of your neighborhood, sometimes there are no sidewalks to take you there. I myself have that as an experience. Not too far away, we could buy groceries if we could only get across that four-lane highway. This hour, we want to look at new urbanism. It's a movement that cultivates qualities found in older communities, like walkability, like connectivity. And this half hour, we want to hear from you as well. For instance, if you could change one physical aspect of your neighborhood, what would it be and why? Perhaps you live in a new urban neighborhood we'll be discussing this hour, like Prairie Trails in Ankeny, Winterset in Ames, or the Peninsula in Iowa City. Why did you choose to live there? What's the appeal for you? 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Starting us off for the first part of this hour, I want to welcome Chuck Connerly. He is a professor and director for the School of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Iowa, also faculty director at the Iowa Initiative for Sustainable Communities, and current president for the Association of Collegiate Schools of Planning. Chuck Connerly, welcome to our program.
Thanks. It's very good to be here.
Martin Schuchert is with us as well. He's principal of RDG Planning and Design. That's an architecture, planning, and landscape architecture firm based in both in Des Moines and Omaha, I understand. Martin Schuchert, welcome.
Thanks very much.
And let's get the big picture before we move on to some individual examples that we find in Cedar Rapids, Des Moines, and Iowa City of new urbanism. Chuck Connerly, let me have you take us back, since we understand that new urbanism springs from suburbia, from that creation. Take us back to the advent of suburbia. Why did we decide to move out of cities into these larger spaces outside of cities?
Well, in part, we decided to move out because we could. Before the advent of the automobile was the advent of the transit bus, and before that, the trolley line. And so really going back, and trolley lines were at one time pulled by horses before they were electrified. But going back to the 1850s and 60s in the United States in urban areas, particularly the affluent began to move out of the central city. As the city, central city began to be identified with manufacturing and industry, the rich decided they wanted to move somewhere out. And then with the advent of trolleys, the middle class could begin to move out to the suburbs as well. But really, the whole process of suburbanization takes off after World War II. There was hardly any housing constructed in the U.S. between the beginning of the Depression in 1929 and the end of World War II in 1945. So there was incredible pent-up demand for new housing. The federal government was supporting this through a variety of subsidies, and including FHA, as well as the Interstate Highway Program that enabled what had been farmland to become areas that were accessible by the automobile. And, of course, as you said, the automobile made a huge, huge difference. So beginning right after World War II, people like Edward Leavitt in Long Island and Pennsylvania began to develop these grand subdivisions, and it occurred all over the United States. And the revolt against the suburbs began really almost as at the beginning of the suburbs, because they were viewed by many people as being very different and very foreign to their experience of urbanism.
Martin Schuchert, weigh in on this, because cars are the central figure here in what we have in turning to suburbia, creating these areas to live in outside of cities?
Well, cars were the enabling element after World War II. It is interesting that public transportation, particularly in a city like New York, was touted at first as being a decentralizing tool, The real evil in late 19th century New York, for example, is density. And there were a group of reformers who developed something that was referred to as the density show. The leader of that was a guy named Benjamin Marsh. And they were very much in favor of the subway system, for example, as a way of decentralizing the population and breaking up the dense population that was generating disease and a variety of other social ills. But the idea of suburbanization to the degree that we know it was the result both of the automobile and I think also to some degree of consumer preferences. As we've always had a bit of a Jeffersonian ideal in this country of living out away from people, of having land around us, and the car enabled that really ultimately to a pretty radical degree.
Mm-hmm.
Radical enough to the degree that now we're thinking that maybe that wasn't such a great idea, and we're beginning to see some reversion, particularly in younger generations of consumers, of really kind of liking denser environments and more mixed-use or multiple-use environments.
When we talk of cars, people are, in fact, driving statistically a little bit less than they have in years past, Martin. Is that significant?
It is really significant. One thing, it's very interesting to chart the course, what we call the mode split of people using various modes of transportation. During World War II, it was predominantly public transportation for a variety of reasons, including material shortages, but also that's just how people lived. That changed dramatically in the 1950s and 1960s. So we saw the decrease in ridership on public transit all over the country, and there have been blips since then that have really related to fuel shortages, fuel costs. Obviously, things would go up as costs and convenience went down. But I think now we're seeing something that's a little bit more pervasive than that.
Mm-hmm.
People are that public transit ridership is up all over the country in all kinds of situations. There's greater interest in what we refer to as active transportation, pedestrian and bicycle transportation as well. And in fact, in many developments that are focused around innovation and new lifestyles and more urban forms of living, the bicycle has really become quite central. Bicycle infrastructure has been quite important. So I think we're seeing a real change in those patterns and preferences that I think is really quite significant.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of people, not everybody, but a number of people are interested in smaller houses with higher quality, that square footage is not necessarily such a big deal anymore for a number of people, that having a large lawn to maintain is not necessarily a priority. And as with everything else, we see a new generation bringing new consumer preferences.
Okay. If this describes you, what Martin Schuchert is saying, you know, not as interested in square footage, interested in community, living in a space where other people do, a functioning, interactive, perhaps diverse community. Join our conversation. Why did you choose that? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Chuck Connerly, for those asking themselves, what is new urbanism, this idea of new urbanism that we're leading up to right now, What's going on? How does it manifest itself in our communities?
Well, basically, new urbanism is old urbanism. If you look at what cities used to look like, I think particularly not so much the big cities, but smaller towns with sidewalks, as you mentioned earlier, with houses that are set close to the street, so it gives you more of an urban type of feeling, with alleys. With traditional architecture, with accessibility by transit or by walking. Walking is key to a part of it. And then obviously you have to have a place to walk too. So basically the zoning that was mentioned earlier ended up in separating various land uses, separating manufacturing from residential, from commercial. And the result was you couldn't walk anywhere. Because they were separated, and so now the notion has taken over of mixed use zoning, whereby people can walk to the to stores and walk to other recreation centers and places like that that they use on a daily basis. And as was said, a lot of younger people in particular are very interested in this. They would like to either bike or ride. They like the recreation. They want to stay in good condition as well.
So yeah, it's obvious that our increasing awareness about health.
Right.
Follows in this these footsteps. Mm-hmm. Whether you're walking or bicycling, you want to get from here to there, but also just not sit on your keister and drive your car around, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So what is this, Chuck Connolly, what is this doing in terms of our social integration, our racial integration?
Well, the concept of density in urbanism is something that seems to imply that there would be greater degree of heterogeneity, greater degree of mixing. But what I don't think is really changing that much is the desire that really helped propel the suburbs, which is basically to get away from poverty, get away from poor people. The two areas that suburbs are designed to do best and they do very well is to provide for good schools and to provide for a safe environment. And I think even with regard to new urbanist communities being built, those motivations are still going to be predominant. So whether it's in a suburb or a city, people are going to want to have an environment in which their kids can go to school, get a good education, and be safe. Now, if they don't have kids, as a lot of young people don't, because they're postponing getting married or having any kind of commitments whatsoever, then that takes care of the kids' situation. But still, the safety is concern to everybody. And so people want a safe environment and a protected environment. And so new urbanism has to address that as well, just as suburbs have had done that.
Martin Schuchert, a while back on this program, we had Bill Bishop, author of The Big Sort, and referring to what Chuck was just talking about. We are sorting ourselves into homogeneous communities, aren't we?
That's true, and Chuck is completely right that many of the projects that we think of as new urbanist projects are really fundamentally subdivisions that are developed in more connected ways, and they remain quite high income and quite homogeneous. There have been attempts in different projects around the country to actually integrate and mix incomes as well as uses. I would say that, however, that one significant influence that we have seen as a result of changing consumer preferences and patterns has been a move toward revitalization, some call it gentrification, of existing neighborhoods. So in a certain way, the philosophy or the preferences that encouraged new urbanism as an idea have actually reinforced old urbanism. The revitalization and reinvestment, literally the fixing up of older neighborhoods that have special characteristics or architecture or at least some thread of retaining mixed uses and neighborhood business districts. And that's been happening all across the country and certainly all across the state of Iowa as well.
If you want to join our conversation about new urbanism this hour, dial 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's go to the phones here for a moment. Dave is with us from Des Moines. Hi, Dave. What's your interest in this topic? Thank you for joining us.
Well, I live in Iowa now. I live in Des Moines, but I've lived all over the country. I've lived in New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles. I've also lived out of the country. And one of the things that strikes me that's germane to this conversation is a quote from famous anthropologist Margaret Mead, who said, "A city who does not have sidewalks does not care about its children." And, you know, what I noticed here is that I don't know how to explain it other than there's a kind of stinginess to it. There's no way for a child to commute easily to a library.
We as pedestrians, don't we feel sometimes like we're the lowest one on the totem pole? Like we came as the afterthought sometimes, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I think it kind of bubbles up into other things. For example, we don't have center lane dividers on highways when we know that these prevent deaths and they're very cheap to install, but we don't install that here in Iowa. And I would hope that this kind of thinking would catch on, because this is a very wonderful, livable, beautiful community that I think people from all over the country are discovering. And I think we need to think about generations to come and neighborhoods. And thanks for hearing me, and I'll listen to you guys. It's fascinating.
Thank you. Dave in Des Moines, 1-866-780-9100. We're in Des Moines, so let's go to Chris Sidoris, is the Vice President of Development at Hubble Realty & Company in our Des Moines studio. Chris, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Ben. I'm glad to be here.
So we've been talking about the big picture of new urbanism. You're here to give us a little slice of that picture, a little smaller focus on Des Moines. Hubble Realty has capitalized on this nationwide movement to move back to some urban ideas, some ideas from decades past. What form is it taking in downtown Des Moines?
Well, you know, fortunately with Hubble, we've looked at it from a lot of different opportunities. You know, when you talk about urbanism, we talk a lot about redevelopment, you know, which you've already heard, revitalization of the area, as well as, you know, revitalization of a prior site that maybe served a different purpose. And so Cityville on 9th is a brand new project that we have coming up right now. It's on a site that was previously the site of Pittsburgh, Des Moines, and so steel. So it's been revitalized. There's been some environmental concerns that have been cleared up. But when we redeveloped it, we really looked at it with a new urbanism point of view. When you look at the site, we've taken those buildings. We've done exactly what we heard from Martin and Chuck, pushed those buildings to the outside, established those sidewalks along the outside, some connectivity to the outside neighborhoods. You kind of look at the walkability score. And then, you know, we took our units and we added a first layer of retail. So, you know, all your, hopefully your shopping, your yoga studio, your bike shop are all on the first floor of this community. So it's all integrated within the community itself.
Mm-hmm. How affordable are these places? And what size living area do you have there?
Well, you know, we looked at it, a lot of different opportunities. We did, of course, the typical one and two bedroom apartments, but we've introduced a new size down here in Des Moines, which is a micro unit, which is about 475 square foot. The idea was to allow some, you know, younger generations that can't always come in at that one-bedroom rental price but can come in at a micro, which will come in at about $625 a month.
Mm, okay. So how many rooms do you have in less than 500 square feet?
It's a micro unit, so it's designed to be an open unit. So we certainly put in a kitchen and a bath area, but we really open up the balance of it. So you as a renter can kind of decide how much of that is bedroom unit and how mm-hmm. much is really living area, and you can decide what works best for you.
I wonder, Chris, if younger people, your contact with younger people, your research in this area tells you that younger people are less interested in homeownership than past generations.
You know, absolutely. That's what we're seeing, you know, across the board. We do a lot of multifamily development, and certainly it's probably more evident in the downtown area. We see a lot more of, you know, your echo boomers, Generation Y folks down there, you know, less interested in, you know, homes and bigger purchases at this point, you know, more technology interested, sustainability. They're delaying those kind of milestones, so they're mm-hmm. more interested in, you know, renting and being downtown, interested in, you know, a walkability kind of lifestyle, if you will.
Let's go to another caller, 1-866-780-9100. Seamus is with us from Dubuque. What's your perspective on this conversation as we discuss new urbanism, Seamus?
Well, originally my thought was about build quality of structures. So I guess the build quality of downtown older districts tends to be a lot better than what's built out in subdivisions today. I guess I'm not that old. I'm only 28. But in my experience, I've seen some pretty poor build quality on some of the newer buildings. Mm-hmm. And I live in a restored schoolhouse, and it was built in 1850. And the walls are 2 feet thick of solid stone.
Okay. So let's have the last 2 points. Let's have Martin and Chuck weigh in on these. Chuck, can you weigh in on the idea of home ownership being less important to younger generations? Why would that be? That is a big thing to give up as an aspiration in your life.
I'm not sure whether it's being given up or just simply being postponed. Certainly in the last 5 or 6 years since the recession began, people have begun to reconsider home ownership because it does tie one down. If you're worried about getting a job, because we know it's harder to get a job than it was 5 years ago, and you know that you may have to be switching jobs, you may be less likely to want to be stuck in a particular place, and therefore your interest in home ownership may be going down.
So it links with
well.
Our mobility exactly. and our job situation
right.
and
right.
the fact that you don't generally have a career for 30 or 40 years at the same institution. And so this is linking into our living choices. Seamus's point there about build quality?
Well, I think that's right, that it is almost impossible economically and technologically to build now the way that people built many years ago. But I would say that in projects that are of high quality, and certainly Hubble Realties are an example of those. The construction quality and the use of contemporary materials is different, but it's good, and they do represent safe investments. So it's different construction, but it's construction that includes both quality and economic feasibility. There's one interesting comment that was made by the first caller, and I think it's an important one, and that is that there are ways of increasing walkability and operational function of neighborhoods and of cities that are sometimes a little bit more work a day than doing major urban design developments. They include things like looking at how you cross a major arterial street, and that caller was referring to the idea of an intermediate island, which means that there's less traffic that you have to negotiate in any one direction to get across the street. And those things are really important, too, and in a lot of ways, and particularly in the Midwest, represent a little bit of a different way in how traffic engineers do business and design roads. A city is more than just the developments within it, but also the connecting fabric and the transportation systems, which are very important. And so some of these techniques, which are sometimes referred to as context-sensitive street design or walkability or bikeability design or complete streets, are also very important in terms of building an overall city that's connected. So, interesting guy, a physicist named Jeffrey Webb, who's writing equations that try to describe urban development. And he's quoted in the New York Times Magazine about a year ago. I've always loved this quotation, that good city planning, the rule of good city planning is maximize interaction, minimize distress.
Okay, Martin Schuchert, please stay with us. Martin Schuchert of RDG Planning and Design. Also with us, Chuck Connolly of the University of Iowa, and Chris Sidoras, Vice President of Development at Hubble Realty. And we'd like to have you join our conversation as we discuss new urbanism. If you could change one physical aspect of your neighborhood, what would it be and why? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find us on Facebook. Back in just a few more minutes with more River to River. Great to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News as we discuss new urbanism today. The idea that people are moving, there's some movement, development towards new urban areas, developing them. We're talking about the development of them in several areas of Iowa, as well as getting a big picture look at it from Chuck Connolly of the University of Iowa, where he is professor and director for the School of Urban and Regional Planning. Also, Martin Schuchert is with us, principal of RDG Planning and Design. It's an architectural planning and landscape architecture firm based in Des Moines and Omaha. Also, Chris Sidoras, the Vice President of Development at the Hubble Realty Company, talking about some goings-on in this area, in the Des Moines area. And reaching out to you, our listeners, this hour, if you could change one physical aspect of your neighborhood, what would it be and why? Kelly on our Facebook page writes, more restaurants, shops within walking distance, and repair those sections of sidewalk that are too rough to walk on. Adrian on our Facebook writes, I love our neighborhood, but I'd like to have block parties to get to know others and enjoy each other's company more often. Chris Sidoris, is this really at the heart of what you look at as in terms of future development for Hubble Realty? Interaction, is that a key word here?
Absolutely. You know, and that's when we talked again about our Cityville development, when we pushed those buildings out, we created a kind of a communal area in the middle of the project because in itself, it's own small community. But again, what we're finding, you know, with your Echo Bermers or younger people is that they want less square footage in the unit, but more interaction space. So we have, you know, big community room, you know, lots of opportunities there, but lots of green area in the middle because they do like to get out and interact with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, so absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so what's different about this, do you think, Chris, about this new generation? 20 to 30 years old, they're not looking for islands of homogeneity in suburbia. Why not?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, they're a lot more socially and technologically defined. You know, they're looking to socialize more. You know, they like a 20-minute lifestyle. They like to be able to walk to public transit, you know, restaurants, retail. And so they're looking about less, you know, we used to blow the building units up and make them larger because, they, you know, everybody wanted to stay inside and more space. They're looking for less square footage. They're, mm-hmm. You know, they're in there just to change clothes and go out again. So.
Less to take care of, less to clean.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You know, definitely more of a paradigm shift. You know, we're seeing units decrease in size, you know, nationally. So it's not unusual to Des Moines.
Let's welcome Jack Hatch to our conversation, State Senator Jack Hatch from Des Moines, also head of Hatch Development Group, which has a number of residential projects in Cedar Rapids and also Des Moines as well. Senator Hatch, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to this discussion.
No politics today, if you don't mind. We're going to talk housing. We'll have you back on for what will be other political developments. We'll be talking about those in the future. But tell us, since we've already had Chris talk quite a bit about Des Moines, I know you're active, your group is active in Cedar Rapids. The downtown Cedar Rapids, an area that has struggled for many years. Why? And what are you doing there?
Well, the interesting thing about Cedar Rapids is that it was struggling, I suspect, like a lot of cities, on what they were to do to attract more people, how to keep the citizens of Cedar Rapids in their city, how to attract downtown businesses. And then, of course, the flood came. In 2008, all of their plans had changed. They were beginning to look at bringing in new housing development. But after the flood, it all really shifted. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Jeff Pomerantz was city manager of West Des Moines, and he got hired after the 3 years after the flood to be the present city manager. And he understood as soon as he got there that Cedar Rapids has an opportunity to be a new American city, mm-hmm. that they have an opportunity to actually rebuild and reformat a city that affects how people live, work, play, how they communicate, and how businesses can look at that kind of dense area as a place to attract more and different types of employees. Mm-hmm. So we have two buildings there. They're sister-brother buildings or twin sisters a block away from each other, and we've elevated the first floor to the second level just in case anybody had questions about it flooding again. It's right downtown. And we are finding dramatic new kind of shifts that it's people, young people especially, always wanted to live in an exciting place. And developers have just been slow to recognize that. And so there's not a new urbanism. I heard one of your guests talk about it's really old urbanism. I mean, mm-hmm. People have been talking about this.
Chuck, yeah.
Yeah, since the 60s and 70s. And developers are really trying to figure this out. City leaders are also ahead of the game. They know this is important. They're trying to lure developers into downtown areas. In the case of Cedar Rapids, we were the first newly constructed apartment building after the flood. We're not afraid of going into those areas. We knew that young people wanted to go into the urban area. They love their quality of life wherever they are, in small towns or other neighborhoods. But the excitement that developers are now creating, especially the Hubble model, where you are really kind of recognizing that people want to reach out and get to know each other and spend less time in their apartment and more time in their community. So
you
that's
said
the
you,
exciting part.
You said that the first floor is actually the second floor, or the living right. floor is above what, a carport?
It's not a port. It's a garage, mm-hmm. closing garage. And in case if it ever floods again, you'll be protected. And that's more of a perception. And Chris and I were talking about this with their development. It's that, you know, we believe and the city has done well and the federal and state government has contributed to protect these low-lying areas within our urban areas from being flooded again. But to really solve the problem of can you attract young people or new people to come down to living in the city, you want to break down a lot of the potential barriers, and that's just one of them. And it really adds with a good architect, in which RDG is, and others, that they can incorporate this into the structure of how you relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important.
Past the facility, the structure that your group is building with Hatch Development Group there, what do you count on the city of Cedar Rapids coming through with to make this a very livable space, a place that people want to live in? What's most important on your list there?
The most important item in deciding where we put our buildings and what we need from the city is their investment in other areas neighboring our development. We can finance this with pretty much a variety of different ways, but in Cedar Rapids, they had a small little neighborhood that was emerging as a nice kind of comfortable historic little district. Then the flood came, and two things happened. The owners of those small little buildings, they put their own money back into it, and they wanted to continue to have this kind of pioneering spirit that they wanted to revitalize that neighborhood. And then the community saw an opportunity, and they have created, just three blocks away from our buildings, the first year-round farmers market. And then that created other interest of other developers and the city's investment in the streets and the infrastructure to really create a sense of economy and commerce that attracted not just young people but families, dogs, the kids. They could walk there. I think Chris talked about the walkability. They had a meeting place all of a sudden, three blocks from our place, a meeting place in which, the elderly can have a conversation with young people, and that the rich can sit down with other people of other economic strata. Mm-hmm.
But does that happen?
That's important.
How do you avoid gentrification of these areas?
Well, you don't push people out. You create a situation where everyone has a place to stay. Gentrification that we know about it and that we studied in the 60s and 70s and 80s was to push all the low-income and even ethnic populations out. What you see now in the cities is that we are attracting all those people back again because there's a mix of housing. You cannot just come in there with a single style or single price for a condominium or apartments.
Is that the way you see it, Chuck Connolly?
I think if it's done well, that's the way you do it. I mean, I don't think any of us want to revisit the urban renewal days of the 60s and 70s and that the Senator Hatch was just describing. We want a mix of income. The question is whether the market will support that or not.
Also joining our conversation, Alan Swanson is with us, co-broker and co-owner of Blank & McCune. That's a real estate company based in Iowa City. And it's a main realtor in a new urbanist peninsula neighborhood. It's called the Peninsula in Iowa City. Also, full disclosure here, Blank & McCune is an underwriter with Iowa Public Radio. Alan, welcome to our program.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
You have something going on in the Peninsula neighborhood that is different than has been described thus far in the program. Describe it for us, because it's very striking once you drive into it and observe it.
Well, it's rather than an infill project, it actually was 45 acres of a farm, and the city decided, using its own citizens and planning charrettes, what it should be. And then it turned out to be new urbanism, and they hired a firm to do the covenants and all the planning.
It's away from the downtown area.
A little bit.
What makes it new urbanism?
It has all the It has a walkability, although most people there, as I think the others here around the table and elsewhere would say, they still keep their cars. But there's a lot more walking going on and bicycling and walking your dog and so on. It's very close to downtown. And so the main thing there is public transportation is every 30 minutes, and it's 10 minutes to get downtown. Mm-hmm. So that really helps.
Describe the architecture in this area, because it is striking in that sense.
It's all meant to be vintage looking from about 1890 to 1930. The houses are Victorian, Italian craftsmen. The buildings are brownstones like you might see in Boston. Very modern inside, but still with a high degree of what we talked about earlier, building quality. The woodwork and the crown molding and all that sort of thing, trim around the windows, some things that you don't always see in some new developments. And that attracts a certain kind of person that wants to go back to that kind of quality.
Now, the Peninsula Project has been going on for how long? When did it start?
The first house was built 10 years ago. This is the 10-year anniversary, so it's taken quite a while. The planning started even before that.
Mm-hmm. It didn't initially take off like a rocket. There were several houses there, and some of them vacant for many years.
That's true.
But that's changed. So what have you learned?
Well, one of the things is to get I think we've marketed it in a different way. We're selling and encouraging the neighborhood and the relationships that Chris was talking about. It's very important. In fact, it's so attractive out there. I actually have two assistants who are realtors who actually moved out there, and they're living there now. So we really believe in it. So we participate in a real way, not just because we're marketing it, in all of the activities. There are movies shown on these little parks at night. There are two parks now, and there'll be four eventually. We have parties and picnics and all kinds of things that get people together. Not just on their porches and their front stoops, because everybody does have one of those, but in little areas that are planned for that.
Mm-hmm. But if you do want to shop, regardless of what type, groceries or whatever, you probably have to get in your car.
Right now, you do, or you can. I've seen people carrying groceries. It's close enough that you can do that. But we have plans for commercial, and there is a building under construction right now that will have a little restaurant, and we hope a little grocery, so that we can finally complete the picture.
Okay, Alan Swanson. Let's go to our phones again. Jackie is joining us from Iowa City. Hi, Jackie. You have thoughts on the Peninsula or other place in Iowa City?
Yeah, actually, this is a really interesting show for us to listen to. My husband and I were a young family. We had actually looked at purchasing in the Peninsula and decided against it, and we purchased something in more diverse neighborhood in Iowa City, the north side. Just because it was actually more affordable, we couldn't afford the housing in the Peninsula neighborhood. And we also felt like it didn't feel true. It kind of felt like it was being forced into an ideal that didn't really, I don't know how else to say it, except it didn't really ring true to us. There wasn't really like a common park space that our kids could play on. And we found that we were more intrigued with the mixed neighborhood with actual diversity of rentals and home ownership. So.
Mm-hmm. Alan Swanson, do you want to respond there?
Well, I can see the point, because the Peninsula in some ways is a modern-day copy of the north end of Iowa City, and it is a little less affordable, although we have things from about 120 to all the way up from there. But you move to an authentic place that is actually copied by the Peninsula.
Mm-hmm. Jackie, before you go, quickly tell us, why did you place so much emphasis on finding a more diverse neighborhood to live in with your family?
Well, it's interesting. We've lived in Boston and New Hampshire. My husband is originally from France, and to him, being able to walk somewhere without having to use a car is a huge part of his childhood and a huge part of my life now. And we really wanted to be able to have our child safely be able to just bike and walk where he wanted to go. And we find in the diversity of our neighborhood that we are interacting with families who have different experiences, different backgrounds, and we're not just all from the same place. So,
Jackie, thank you for sharing your thoughts from Iowa City. 1-866-780-9100. Coming to the end of our hour, Lydia on our Facebook page, when we asked to, change, if we had one physical aspect of your neighborhood to change, and why, Lydia says more front porches. They disappeared. She wants front porches to encourage folks to spend more time in their front yards. meeting and talking with neighbors. Let's go to Mary Jo quickly in Iowa City before our hour ends. Hi, Mary Jo.
Hi. I'm calling because I am an enthusiastic new member of Iowa City Co-Housing, and we're building Prairie Hill, Iowa City's first co-housing community, which is a neighborhood just a mile and a half from downtown Iowa City.
So what does co-housing mean? How is it different than what we're talking about here?
Co-housing is a movement that began in Denmark and spread all over the world. There are now about 100 co-housing projects existing in the United States. There are a couple of them in Madison, Wisconsin. We expect to be the first completed one in Iowa. It consists of a large common house with some common facilities with small private homes. In our case, there will be 30 households altogether, and our homes will be designed with the planet in mind, and they will be smaller because we will also have the jointly owned common spaces with shared resources.
Mm-hmm. How many people are going in on this co-housing facility?
It will be 30 households altogether. So far, we have 7.
Wow. Wow. Okay, you have 7. I think to get an idea of the origins of this, that Danish community is in a documentary, if I'm not mistaken, Mary Jo, called Happiness. Have you heard of that?
I think that may be a Swedish film, but I've heard about it. I haven't seen it.
Okay. Well, thank you for giving us a glimpse into how you're revitalizing or changing urban living, Mary Jo, in Iowa City.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Let's finish up this hour by having our guests look forward. We can go around the horn quickly to have us talk a little bit about forward thinking. Let's start with you, Jack Hatch. When we talk about Cedar Rapids, what do you see happening there in the next few years?
There's no question that Cedar Rapids is building a new style American city. They have attracted businesses to expand, new businesses to come down. They've just rebuilt their convention center. They have a very aggressive city plan. They have a dynamic mayor. They have a professional city manager and staff. They are working, and most importantly, they have engaged neighborhoods. The neighborhoods are important to be active participants in any housing project that's going to involve more of a community spirit and expansion of their program. And we not only see that in big cities, but we see that in small, medium-sized towns throughout Iowa, where the big city neighborhoods and small towns really have a lot more in common, and it's really embedded in the participation of its citizens.
Chris Sidoris, what are you looking forward to in the coming years, quickly before we end our hour, as where we will be in 5 or 10 years?
Well, you know, I think we're going to have a continued growth in rental multifamily. I think just the way that it looks is going to be different, you know, from micros all the way up to some rental townhomes that we're doing in the downtown area. So I think increasing emphasis on rental and maybe a little decreased emphasis on homeownership.
Mm-hmm. Martin Schuchert, what is standing in the way of new urbanism, what we're calling that, really becoming more pervasive as you see it?
Well, I think what we're hearing, and I think what's really exciting about the conversation, is that a lot of different things are being built and developed. There's more interest in revitalizing older neighborhoods, interest in developing connected environments that recall older neighborhoods, and there are traditional markets as well. You know, people have different preferences, and a new urbanist development, an in-city neighborhood, none of those settings are for everybody, and people will demand different things. I think that one thing that the market is doing is, for the first time, not building all of the same thing, but responding to diverse demands. And that's actually a very good thing, that everybody is different, everybody has different priorities, and it's good now that the market is responding to those who are more who are specifically interested in urbanism, in interaction, in more intimacy,
right,
in communities. And I think that variety will be very productive.
Chuck Connolly, we have about a minute left as director for the School of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Iowa. Sum this all up. We're learning from the way things used to be and incorporating them into our present and our future.
Yeah. I think what we're seeing is a greater mix now. It used to be that 100 years ago, 80 years ago, the central city was low income and the suburbs were all affluent. affluent, but now it's getting much more mixed, and so there's pockets of affluence everywhere. The biggest challenge is that as a society, there's greater income inequality, and the rich and the not-so-rich are separating away from each other. We need to figure out how to deal with that.
Alan Swanson of Iowa City, what do you see as the biggest challenge?
Meeting the needs of the baby boomers who want the small spaces just as the young people do, and I think that's why we're seeing all this. Quality, lack of work to do on your house, and the freedom to interact with other people.
Alan Swanson of Blank and McCune in Iowa City. Also with us, Chuck Connolly of the University of Iowa. Martin Schuchert, thank you for joining us of RDG Planning and Design. Thank you. Also, thanks to Chris Sidoris of Hubble Realty and State Senator Jack Hatch from Des Moines. Thank you all for joining us for a fascinating hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Ben Stanton, and Emily Woodbury. Technical support from Dennis Reese. In Des Moines, we had help from Clay Masters today. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.